You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good morning, friend. Welcome into the Mike Allen Show here on this Thursday, October 20th.
Marching our way through the year, and it's been a pleasure to be with you. It'll be a pleasure to be with you the next couple of hours. Next hour, of course, it's a Thursday, so you can expect Father Alan Carter for a First Cup Theology moment. He wants to talk about growth in virtue in the real world, as opposed to growth in virtue in an imaginary world somewhere. Definitely keeping it real here on the show. So Father Alan will be with us at the bottom of the next hour. Look forward to that. Also, we'll talk about a long overdue visit I had yesterday to what's called the Holy Land of Kentucky. We broadcast here from Lexington, just west of here, about an hour. The little town of Bardstown, which has a very rich Catholic history. Not only that, but just outside Bardstown, the Trappist Monastery, the Abbey of Gethsemane, which actually is the oldest continuous monastery in the United States, and known, perhaps best known, as being the home of Thomas Merton, whose spiritual autobiography, Seven Story Mountain, made such an impact in this country back in the 40s, 50s, and 60s before his untimely death. And as a native of Central Kentucky, who's now 50, I've been Catholic 11 years. I'm embarrassed to say I had never been to the Abbey of Gethsemane until yesterday. And my short visit left me itching to go back. So we'll talk about that a little bit today. Also, a forgotten darkness of our racial past, a new movie's Obvious Temptation, and why there has to be more to the story in Nashville, the story of a parent wanting their child to opt out of a Catholic high school class on human sexuality for what I think seem like legitimate reasons, at least reasons that should be respected, and for whatever reason they have not been. So we'll talk about that on the program today too. Certainly your calls are welcome. We'll get into the debate as well a little bit from last night, the last presidential debate, if you stayed up and watched that. But if you've got a thought or comment anytime during the program today, 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or you can post a thought on Facebook or on Twitter. My stomach's still full, by the way, from a buffet lunch I ate yesterday on my trip. See, I buffets are not good for me. Quite frankly, I do not need to eat all I can eat. And we went to the Stephen Foster Buffet in Bardstown, Kentucky. I'm sure the 19th century songwriter would be pleased to know that human beings are gorging themselves under the banner of his name. But it was very good. I mean, any buffet that has both bacon and fried chicken, and then a plethora, and yes, I know what the plethora is, a plethora of desserts, and indulged on that as well, a piece of pecan pie and a bowl of banana pudding. I mean, the other guys at my table were doing it, you know? Yes, Mom, and if my friends did jump off a bridge, I would probably join them, just so you know. So anyway, I'm actually still full from that lunch I had yesterday. So keep me away from buffets. Of course, I continue to be reminded of a very portly Protestant minister. Actually, he just recently passed away. Jovial, funny guy, master of the one-liner. And he once said that there was a biblical reason for his sizable girth. It was that all those passages that he read in the scripture, particularly of St. Paul, talking about buffeting his body, he always read it as buffeting his body. Rimshot. Speaking of eating, I've got a friend who is wanting me to join his White Castle Club, the official group that you have to to join, you have to eat 15 White Castles in like, I don't know, 30 minutes. No, thank you. I love White Castles. I actually once won an eating contest where I ate 11 in 7 minutes, but the only way I'm eating 15 White Castles now is if it's helping me in preparation for a colonoscopy the next day. I just saying. 573-4-BREAD-4, if you would chime in. I love this prayer, which is the first reading today. St. Paul from this letter to the Ephesians. A common theme or sense that you get when you read through St. Paul's letter to the Ephesians is really a desire that he has for those to whom he writes to really be able to grasp what they have in Jesus Christ. I've said it before, the longer I'm a Christian, the longer that I, in my imperfection, seek to follow Jesus Christ, however haltingly, however much it's a case sometimes of a few steps forward and a few steps back, I'm more and more convinced that the essence of holiness, really, of sainthood, of living a life of Christian love, is not about somehow through my own effort conjuring up greatness or thinking of some bold thing that I can do for the Lord or whatever. That it really is about believing and appropriating what God says about me is already true. This is how we can understand this use of the word saint, even in the Catholic Church. I remember for a long time as a non-Catholic, I would have these occasional thoughts when I would, from my faulty perceptions of Catholics, I would have these sort of gotcha points that I would make either in real conversations with people about Catholics or just in my own mind when I would read about the Catholic Church canonizing a saint or such and such. I'd say, oh, well, Catholic Church, they must not know that every Christian is a saint. I mean, read St. Paul. Read his letter to the Ephesians, in which he says, Paul, an apostle of Christ Jesus by the will of God, to the saints who are also faithful in Christ Jesus. Oh, there you go. Catholics and their saints. We're all saints, I tell you. And much like many of the accusations that I would mentally or others mentally lob at the Catholic Church, I didn't know what I was talking about. Yes. You know, the Catholic Church is pretty familiar with the New Testament. They know all about how St. Paul talks about the saints in Ephesus or the saints in Philippi and the saints of Thessalonica and so forth. The Catholic Church simply says, though, that there are those public saints, capital S, who live lives of such obvious holiness and virtue that they become for us standard bearers of what discipleship looks like. But yes, we are all little s saints. We are all holy through our own baptism. That word holy means set apart. We've been set apart for something. We've been claimed by one who is beyond us, and he has his grip on us. And there is a certain degree of rest we can find in that, but we're also compelled to cooperate through our own obedience with the work that he wants to do in us, as St. Paul talks about in the book of Philippians, to work out our salvation. So the church is fully aware of the fact that all of us are called saints. But this is back to my original point. It's about letting the fullness of that identity begin to permeate who we are, to work its way out in our conduct, in our attitudes, in our behaviors. And St. Paul, early on in this letter he writes to the Ephesian Christians, talks a lot about having the eyes of their heart enlightened that they can see and know the hope to which they've been called. Earlier in that introductory chapter, he gives praise to God the Father who has blessed us in Christ, he says, with every spiritual blessing in the heavenly places. In chapter 2, he reminds them that they've been made alive, resurrected out of their trespasses and sins, and that we've been raised up with Christ. We've been saved by grace. And that he created us for good works that he prepared in advance. He also goes on to talk about the peace we have in Christ Jesus, who has united not only the seemingly unbridgeable chasm between Gentile and Jew, but all human beings under his own infinite and glorious fatherhood. And so after all these expressions St. Paul has in this letter, and again, the beautiful thing about the New Testament letters is they were written to a specific audience at a specific time, but like all Scripture, they transcend history. It's a living text that speaks to us even now. And so St. Paul, in today's first reading, "For this reason I bow my knees before the Father, from whom every family in heaven and on earth is named, that according to the riches of his glory, he may grant you to be strengthened with might through his Spirit in the inner man, and that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith, that you, being rooted and grounded in love, may have power to comprehend with all the saints what is the breadth and length and height and depth, and to know the love of Christ, which surpasses knowledge, that you may be filled with all the fullness of God." It's not a bad prayer to start your day, to be aware of, to soak in the knowledge that at the heart of this universe, what holds it all together, is a love that is infinite in every direction. A love which is yours to claim in Jesus Christ. We'll be back with more with a question of the day. This is the Mike Allen Show. You're listening to Breadbox Media.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Fifteen minutes past the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show here on this 20th of October, feast day of St. Paul of the Cross. My question of the day, asking for a little disclosure from you about your delinquent background. Were you paddled at school? And of course, if so, for what? And we got to get the story there. And then, would you permit your child to be paddled at school? I saw a story yesterday about a teacher somewhere, I can't remember where, who had washed one of her students' mouths out with soap, creating some bit of a firestorm, as you can imagine. And it reminded me of this story that I had seen locally here in Lexington, where we broadcast from, in the local paper, about how corporal punishment still exists in Kentucky schools. And I'm sure Kentucky's not the only state with the paddle in its educational system. Now, granted, the number of students paddled has dropped significantly. I think in 2010, 1,581 were the number of times Kentucky schools used corporal punishment. And then this past year, only 574. And I think a lot of people under the impression, and this may be true in other states, I don't know, I haven't done enough research, but there are a lot of people under the impression that the paddle has been dropped out of school discipline. But actually, I think in most counties in Kentucky anyway, as long as the parents grant their consent for the paddle to be used, it's still on the table. So how about you? Were you paddled at school? If so, for what reason? And would you permit your child to be paddled at school? I'll answer the first question first for me. Yes, I've been paddled at school. I know, hard to imagine, redhead, freckled-faced kid with a sharp mouth ever getting paddled at school. But yes, it happened.
It was a little stretch there I had from fourth grade to sixth grade. Fourth grade, Mrs. Featherston, who seemed to me to be older than dirt. Actually, her son would end up being my principal in high school. But anyway, a little country school, and I got paddled by her at least three times. I think once for fighting with another kid. Another time that I recall, I was shooting a paper wad in my aspiring basketball career. I was shooting a paper wad at the trash can next to her desk, missed badly, which should have been a foreshadowing of my basketball career, and missed the trash can and hit her in the head. Not good. And back then, man, it was there was a public shaming involved. How my psyche survived to this day, I have no idea, because my paddlings would come in full view of my academic colleagues. And then finally, evidently, I had been swinging my lunchbox on the way to the school cafeteria, my metal lunchbox. That was back when they really knew how to make lunchboxes. And mine, I think, was a Walt Disney World lunchbox. Yes, I agree. I'll give you, not the most masculine of choices. I guess I made up for it by swinging my lunchbox, and I evidently hit some poor little girl in the back and left a bruise. And so Mrs. Featherston pulled me up to the front of the class, told the entire class, showed me the bruise, told the entire class she was going to make me experience the same pain I had inflicted in a spanking. And then fifth grade, Mrs. Roberts, the only thing I recall is I think I threw some sort of a big Roadrunner-shaped eraser across the room at somebody, which brought forth a paddling. But it all culminated in sixth grade when I got called to the principal's office, who had evidence before him of several spoons I had bent in the cafeteria. You know, hamming it up, as I am still wont to do from time to time. I had been bending spoons into various shapes. And a kid, I can still remember his face, told on me. And so the principal paddling is not one you want, because, you know, I had to lean over, grab onto the file cabinet, and four strong licks. Now, you always want to keep the stiff upper lip, but there were a tear or two welling up in the corner of my eye, I will admit. That was my last paddling, I guess. Scared straight. So it was. So how about you? Were you paddled at school, and would you permit your child to be paddled at school? Yes, I think I probably would permit it, to be honest with you. I think I would permit it. 573-4BREAD-4. Gary comments on Facebook. He said, I had a weird teacher in second grade in Ohio who paddled every kid on their birthday. One smack for each year. I had just moved back from England and thought, good gosh, Americans are strange. And I was thankful for a late May out of school birthday. That's pretty good right there. What kind of, my goodness, really? In what planet did that sound like a good idea? Crazy. My big mistake in the sixth, well, I'll save you on that one. I'll tell you that in the What Were You Thinking awards, because I tell you, a big mistake that I made in that regard. In terms of sports last night, we'll get into the wrestling match that was the presidential debate in the next segment. The sports last night, the Chicago Cubs, who had been in a serious offensive drought and falling back 2-1 to the Dodgers, bounced back big time last night. All it took, evidently, was a switch of bats for Anthony Rizzo. The Cubs win 10-2, setting up game 5 tonight in Chavez Ravine. If you're the Dodgers, you do not want to go back to Chicago down 3-2. I'll just tell you. So the Cubs have hopefully put in a little salve on their, I'm sure, fans who are already predisposed to believe the worst. Anticipatory grief. Believe me, as a Kentucky football fan, I understand and practice that mentality. Expect the worst, then when it happens, you at least convince yourself it's not as painful. And then if the good happens, you're pleasantly surprised. So, Cubs fans, I know you've been thinking this is your birthright year 108 years. Hopefully you've got a little bit of your mojo back. I mean, you are the best team in baseball, but just nothing's going to be handed to you, and you got to live it up. Live up to it. Let's see. Interesting piece here on NFL fans who are, according to this story, repelled by the Colin Kaepernick-inspired protests of the national anthem, which have spread, by the way. Last Friday night, my son's football team playing their arch rival public school from a county just south of where we broadcast from. And according to my son, all the players on the other team, he said, "Did you see, Dad? They all knelt during the national anthem." And evidently, this, according to this story from Yahoo Sports, is affecting the ratings in the NFL. In a survey of 1,136 Americans who identify themselves as NFL fans, 29% said they are watching fewer NFL games. And the fans claiming that said the reason they're watching less of the NFL, they cited the following reasons. The number one was protests by Colin Kaepernick and others. So interesting indeed. All right, let's move on to the What Were You Thinking Awards of the day, because we've got a few good ones. First one I want to give is to this guy in Scotland. Evidently, the former chairman of an anti-stalking campaign group has been accused of, guess what, harassing his ex-wife over a nine-month period. Peter Noriko parted company with the Action Against Stalking charity earlier this year before he was charged with the offenses, it is understood. So, yeah, when you've got a guy who's spearheading your campaign against stalking, who's charged with stalking, it's not good for PR. Just saying. Anyway, go dumb or go home, as we like to say, and that's certainly up there. The second one I want to give goes to a local McDonald's franchise. This was a story that at first was inspiring, and then I was like, now hold on a second. Evidently, there was a 100-year-old, or there is a 100-year-old, who regularly frequents her local McDonald's. And a very touching story that McDonald's there, and this is in Hanover, Pennsylvania, threw her a birthday party. She got the surprise of a lifetime. They threw her this birthday party. They had her a wonderful cake, flowers, balloons, and they just sang happy birthday to her and let her eat lunch. They also, by the way, this is where the award comes in, decided that they would give her, they also signed a card and passed it around, they decided that they would give her free meals for life. Did I mention she's 100 years old? Woo, way to step out there, McDonald's. I mean, couldn't McDonald's offer free meals for life for every 100-year-old in this country? I mean, I remember restaurants back in the day, they used to give you a free meal on your birthday. I mean, how much are you going to be on the hook for? Free meals for everybody age 100 and older. I guess, what, bring your birth certificate? So, yeah, I'm not sure that is the PR bonus that McDonald's, the local McDonald's, thinks it is. I'll give you the winner, though. It has to do with me and a secret about my own spanking that I told that I shouldn't have. We'll be back in a minute. If you've got a call, you've got a comment, 573-4BREAD-4. This is the Mike Allen Show.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
We're right at the bottom of the hour back on the Mike Allen Show here on Breadbox Media. If you want to learn more about Breadbox Media, check it out at breadboxmedia.com. You can learn about our different contributors, our whole approach to things, which we very much see as journeying together. We are not theological experts, but we have met Jesus Christ. We've experienced the power of his love and transforming grace, and we want to share it together as we journey on in life, as we all seek to find what this whole life is about. And also, we've come to discover the beauty and the richness of the faith founded by Jesus upon St. Peter and the apostles, handed down through the centuries, the fullness of the Christian faith. Not something that I've experienced in my life that was somehow something that canceled or abolished the faith of my evangelical background, but actually brought it to completion, to its consummation. Now, I say completion, that doesn't mean I've arrived by any means. I got a long way to go, and thank God for the sacrament of confession. But I've found the beauty and the richness of the truth. Well, or let me just say this, the truth has found me. That's usually what we realize. So you can check that all out at breadboxmedia.com. I think very honest show hosts, each with their own quirky temperament and perspective on things, all various approaches, but the same one truth, because the word Catholic means universal. It's the whole truth for the whole world. So check it out at breadboxmedia.com. You can listen to podcasts of shows that you miss, or even subscribe through iTunes, Google Play, or Podbean. You can also become a friend of your favorite show through a regular monthly contribution. You can show your support for that show and receive access to exclusive online content. So check it out at breadboxmedia.com. Again, my question of the day, were you ever spanked or paddled in school? And if so, come on, we got to have the backstory for that. And then would you support, as some parents do, would you support the paddling of your own child in school should it be needed? See, my parents were pretty old school. They tended, when I got in trouble, to believe the teacher, to believe the problem was with me, not with them. I like to think that I've kind of followed in that footstep with my own children, but of course, it wasn't always fun at the time. Like, and this is where I'm going to go back to the What Were You Thinking Awards. By the way, let me mention again on this, I gave this McDonald's in Hanover, Pennsylvania, a What Were You Thinking Award. But really, if you think about it, it's kind of a brilliant move, actually. They gave this 100-year-old woman not only a birthday party, but free meals for life. And look at it this way. I mean, She's 100 years old, so how many free meals is that really going to be? No disrespect. But then when she also says, because of this incentive, I'm now going to go in 3 times a day, every day, she said. So won't that actually reduce probably the number? I mean, if you're 100 and you're eating McDonald's breakfast, lunch, and dinner, now, not judging, I love McDonald's. But I'm not saying it would facilitate you continuing to beat the demographic lifespan trends. Let's just put it the way. Anyway, okay, so our What Were You Thinking Award, the winner, go dumb or go home, I'm going to give to myself, my sixth grade self. After I was spanked by the principal, as I told you already, for bending spoons. For some reason, I guess guilty conscience, I don't know why, I somehow felt compelled to tell my older sister about it. Now, come on. You know, siblings, and particularly my relationship with my older sister, she was a year and a half older than me, a year ahead of me in school, a little dicey. And so I'll never forget it. We were out with my mother, my older sister, Michelle, my younger sister, Margie, and me. Margie and I were in the back seat, my mom and my older sister Michelle in the front seat. And we were parked somewhere. I think we were getting ready to go into a grocery store. And my sister Michelle said, "Mom, what would you do if one of us got spanked by the principal?" Meanwhile, both of my rear end cheeks are growing feet and walking down the seat toward the floorboard of the car. My mother says, "Why?"
Did one of you get spanked by the principal? And my mother immediately looks in the rearview mirror. I can see her eyes staring back at me. I mean, come on. She was playing the odds. She knew the three of us. And so my sister Michelle says, well, it wasn't me, and it wasn't Margie. So, thanks, sis. Never let her live that one down. But again, the stupidity on my part, lo those however many years ago, 39 years ago, was me deciding to tell my sister. What was I thinking? Anyway, so we got that going for us. If you want, you got your own to share, we'd love to hear from you. 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or you can post a thought on Facebook or on Twitter, Mike Allen Show, the handle, look it up. Shannon says, I never got spanked at school, but yes, at home. Well, goody two shoes. She says, I would never, in all caps, no need to shout, advocate that a teacher use this method to discipline my children. If a teacher complains of my children's misbehavior, I will take care of it. Okay, so we'll take that as a big no from Shannon for sure. I watched the debate last night. I'm a little groggy this morning because of it. Stayed up to watch it and then stayed up to watch some of the reaction. I have not gone on to Twitter really to see what the Twitter reaction is. Sometimes that's one of the most fun things to do during a debate is to simply follow it as it unfolds in real time on Twitter. My impression, and again, it's interesting to watch it as a neutral observer because I've made public and clear that I cannot, in terms of my own conscience, I cannot vote for either candidate. I thought Chris Wallace, as the debate moderator, did the best job of the three. Now, well, let's just say I thought this debate was the most civil of the three, which did not have a huge bar to get over to accomplish that, I will certainly admit. And whether it was the fact that they both felt the need, therefore, to be on their best behavior, or it was the fact that Chris Wallace had a command of the situation better than the previous debate moderators, I don't know. But I thought that, by and large, Chris Wallace did a good job, and I thought the two candidates did the best job of the three debates as sort of keeping their crazy under control. In my opinion, I think Trump helped himself last night. I don't know that he's helped himself enough, and whether there's enough people still undecided and still in play that he helping himself. Because here's where I thought Chris Wallace, unlike the previous two debate moderators, I thought was much more even-handed, to be honest. I thought he called both candidates out on some things. Certainly, he didn't give either candidate a break. But I thought perhaps unlike some of the other moderators who, I mean, I don't think it's conspiracy theory to say that it's clear that by and large, in most election years, most mainstream journalists tilt left. I think that's pretty hard to dispute. Now, there are certainly plenty of voices out there on the right, and talk radio perhaps balances it out with its strong conservative bias. But certainly when it's come to the debate moderators, I thought there has been, it's been pretty clear that they saw their role as primarily challenging Trump, not both candidates equally. And I thought Chris Wallace asked some pretty strong questions. I think that Hillary Clinton decided she was not going to go on the attack. Let Donald Trump unravel himself. And on the whole, I thought he got the better of it last night. I'll be honest with you. I was, of course, the thing that has set off the alarm bells in some in the media is the awful thing that Donald Trump said, they say, about whether or not he would accept the election results. They were breathless about that and how horrible and undemocratic that is and so forth. I didn't see it as that big of a deal, I'll be honest with you, because I think it's Trump's shtick. It's the way he operates. I mean, my guess is that, you know, he would contest his parents' bedtime when he was 10 years old. I mean, just the way the man is. And yes, Al Gore did not just simply go quietly into that good night back in 2000. So I think they're making a little much of that, to be honest with you. The other thing I thought about last night was it's just horrifying to hear. And I'll give the Donald props on this one because, you know, his pro-life bona fides, I think, are still extremely shaky. And when you look at his career, it does appear that his pro-life convictions certainly are conveniently connected with his desire to win the presidential election under the GOP ticket. But to have Hillary Clinton basically admit openly that she saw no limits or restrictions on abortion as appropriate, and she really evaded the horrific reality behind partial birth abortion. If you are a pro-life voter convinced that Donald Trump is the guy to advance the pro-life cause or the anti-abortion cause, I thought last night would have entrenched that for you even more. If you got a thought on that, I'd love to hear from you. 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. You can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. We'll be back. This is The Mike Allen Show.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Fifteen minutes before the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show. Here on Breadbox Media, again, my question of the day, with a recent story about how corporal punishment or spanking is still on the table in Kentucky schools where we broadcast from, and I'm sure they're not the only state that that's still a possibility. The numbers have dropped, certainly, and parental permission is required before the paddle can be wielded. But weren't there always legends? If you're in my age group and older, probably, there was always legends about paddles, and particularly the principal's paddle. You know, that he plugged it in and it had spikes on it. No one had ever seen it, but they knew it was there. Now, having been spanked by the principal, I never experienced that. His was just a flat wood paddle. But I know I have seen teachers with the paddle with the holes in it. Now that, boy, that is a dark Torquemada-ish instrument. The paddle with the holes in it so that air resistance will be lessened. So I guess that wrist speed of the paddle against the backside can be magnified. Wow. Holes in the paddle. Interesting. Anyway, so you want to chime in on that? I'd love to hear your story. 573-4BREAD-4, both whether you've ever been paddled in school. And Shannon, little goody two-shoes, probably running the slideshow at the slide projector at school. You know, remember the slide projector? And it was always the teacher's pet that ran it. And Pocahontas saved John Smith that day. Beep. She was probably one of those. Just playing with you, Shannon. I'm sure you went. And she would not grant permission for such a paddling to take place. Let's look back. Oh, by the way, I was going to say one other thing about the debate last night. I did think there were some significant questions raised about, there were some substantive differences, obviously, on issues like free trade, immigration, the Russian situation. There were, of course, some of the ridiculous comments like Donald Trump saying, no one respects women more than me. No one. Really? Is there not some land between complete admission of guilt and the craziness of making a statement like that? No one respects women more than me.
But then Hillary Clinton also challenged on the dealings of her foundation and as well as some of her remarks that have come out through WikiLeaks about, you know, the whole public position, private position, and some stuff she said to a Brazilian, some Brazilian bankers and so forth. So we'll see how it plays out. It would be the comeback of comebacks if the polls were to shift significantly and allow the Donald to win. Let's look back in history a little bit on this date throughout the ages. In 1803, the U.S. Senate ratified the Louisiana Purchase, one of the great deals in the history of this country, no doubt, which would then spark Lewis and Clark's adventure not long after. In 1820, Spain also sells part of Florida to the U.S. for $5 million. In 1864, U.S. President Lincoln formally establishes Thanksgiving as a national holiday. And a happy birthday to Snoop Dogg, born in Los Angeles, California, 45 years old today. I saw an interesting video someone had posted the other day of Snoop Dogg cooking with Martha Stewart. Now, that was something. In 1977, three members of the rock band Lynyrd Skynyrd killed in the crash of a chartered plane near Macomb, Mississippi. In 1979, the birthday of John Krasinski of The Office fame. Now, 37 years old. 1990, on this day, the Cincinnati Reds, my Reds, swept the Oakland A's in the 86th World Series. I happened to be at Game 6 of the National League Championship Series, in which the Reds clinched against the Pittsburgh Pirates. I got offered tickets at the last minute, drove up there with my wife. It was fantastic. There was such joy. First time Cincinnati had been to the World Series in 14 years. Strangers hugging strangers in the stands, but almost to a person in celebrating their win and their trip to the World Series, we would say, they're going to get killed by the A's, but it's great to go to the World Series. A's being the defending champ, Bash Brothers, McGuire, Canseco, and all that. Little did we know the Reds would sweep the A's, led by Eric Davis in the first inning of the first game's two-run shot over the center field wall. Oh, it's really been 26 years. Happy 25th, happy silver wedding anniversary to actress Lisa Hartman and country singer Clint Black. Clint Black and Lisa Hartman Black, the rare, long-lasting celebrity marriage. And then in 2011, 5 years ago, Muammar Gaddafi, Libya's dictator for 42 years, was killed as revolutionary fighters overwhelmed his hometown of Sirte and captured the last major bastion of resistance 2 months after his regime fell. Gaddafi was 69 years old. Really, he'd been in power since he was 27. Wow. Anyway, so that's a perusal through history. Next hour, I'll share a little bit of history with you that I learned yesterday on my trip with my full-time work with the Catholic Diocese to the Catholic Holy Land of Bardstown, Kentucky, which was one of the original dioceses in this country, and the remarkable story of the first bishop there, Benedict Joseph Flaget, which I had not been aware of before, how he ended up there and all the rest. You know, the first diocese in this country, of course, in the fledgling Catholic presence in the country was the Diocese of Baltimore, which was originally created as a place where religious freedom would make Catholics welcome. Didn't always work out that way. And so Catholics, there was sort of a diaspora, let's just say, of Catholics scattering out into the nascent American frontier. And so in 1808, there were four new dioceses that were named, and Baltimore was elevated to an archdiocese. And those four being New York, Philadelphia, Boston, and Bardstown, Kentucky. Bardstown would end up, I think, being comprised of about 10 states, believe it or not. But it was one of the four original dioceses in this country, and Benedict Joseph Flaget sent to be the first bishop. I'll talk a little bit more about that in the second hour. On my trip, I wanted something to read for the bus trip there, so I picked up a local paper, the Lexington Herald Leader, which I subscribed to for many years until their editorial cartoonist made me so mad I had to quit. But I still pick up one from time to time. there was an article in here. For 100 years, Lexington kept a colored marriage registry. Evidently, after the Civil War, after emancipation, before emancipation, there were no civil records of marriages between black people. And what's remarkable there, even more remarkable, I think, than that, which is oftentimes a forgotten, I think, indignity. Not only the fact that they were not recognized as full persons with full constitutional rights, our black brothers and sisters, but we didn't even recognize their marriages, not only in terms of in the civil government, but even in fact when slave families could be split up with very little regard for established relationships. Well, after emancipation, of course, that changed. But even so, in Lexington, Kentucky, for over 100 years, from 1866 to 1969, there was actually a colored marriage registry. In other words, civil marriage records were actually segregated. That's just unbelievable. Yeah, so when we talk about making America great again, we have to be very, very careful with language like that or any sort of sentimental longing for days gone by, because it all depends on your perspective. Every generation has its bright spots. Every generation has its blind spots. And sometimes those blind spots continue for generations. I just thought it was a fascinating story yesterday that... As the story says, because of legalized segregation, the marriage registry was kept separate from the white marriage registry. But in 1958, in the wake of the Supreme Court Brown versus Board of Education decision that ended legalized segregation, the Kentucky legislature passed a law to incorporate all government registries. But Fayette County officials did not actually do so until 1968. Wow. And so basically they're saying they've now put these records online, and so that families who are trying to find some genealogical records, and think about how important there's a reason that websites like Ancestry.com are so popular, is because genealogy, and this is a very biblical concept, it's rooted in our fathers in the faith, the Jews, who took painstaking care in the pages of Scripture to record genealogies. We find them boring on a certain level, but you really can't know fully who you are as a people unless you know from whom you came, right? I mean, there is a certain power in that, in your identity. And this is such an indignity, not only the fact that marriages records were not kept or recognized among African-American slaves, but that even after emancipation, so-called colored marriages were kept separately and segregated. It hadn't been that long, folks. We sometimes forget that. We'll talk about this more in the second hour as well as talk to Father Alan Carter about growing in virtue in the real world. This is the Mike Allen Show. This is Breadbox Media.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.